back. We are back again. Somehow. This is Hope This Helps.
Yeah, somehow.
I've run out of good intros.
Yeah, me too.
Someone should write them for us, because I'm not good at them. Please.
Please. No, we usually do okay. I don't know what it is about Saturday evening. Just get extremely zen.
It's just zen, it's quiet, and sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not. It gets the energy up and the energy down at the same time.
Right.
But that's how it goes sometimes, so whatever.
Yeah, it's an up and downhill battle all the time. I don't know. Anyways.
So, what are we talking about? Oh my god, we got a lot to talk about tonight.
We do. This is going to be, for lack of better words, a bitch fest.
Absolutely. Just the BF, as maybe I'll call it.
The BF.
Yeah, we got stuff like Microsoft changing everything and telling you that we're going to get rid of this one thing and we have a replacement, but we haven't fully furnished. Yeah. Oh my god, I can't even.
Fully finished.
I can't even speak because of how stressed out I am about this, but we'll get to it. That's a sneak preview of what we're going to get to.
And you can't talk tonight either.
No, I can't, which is unfortunate because I actually put in a couple sections where I'm going to hopefully do some tutorializing rambles about SCCM and PowerShell. So we'll see how this goes. We'll see if I make it to that point, but we'll get there. Tiff, you've got stuff too.
Yeah, like Teams. A lot of changes this week on Teams. I'll cry a lot about that secret thing.
Yeah, we'll get there. We got question of the week. We got all kinds of stuff coming your way in just a few moments if you last that long.
Yeah,
in this podcast. But if you're listening to episode 8, then hey.
It's funny because I just forgot what I was going to say.
Don't you hate that?
It's taking us a little while to boot up today. Don't mind.
Yep, it's a slower boot up intro today because, I don't know, we just can't boot up. Sometimes you can't boot up.
Yeah,
There's days you just get disk not found.
Yeah.
Or the disk is spinning too slowly. I think today is one of those days.
It definitely is making the clicking sound.
I'm having that issue right now.
I just feel like my brain isn't working today. So, what do we have this week on the weekly boot up?
Okay, so boot up, with otherwise topics that don't really deserve a segment but are worth talking about. So, number one, something coming to Firefox, well, it's already come to Firefox at this point, is the rollout of DNS. DNS over HTTPS has come to Firefox, and it is effectively live now as you got the latest update. And what is it basically? It is an attempt by Mozilla and a bit of a part of a greater attempt to increase security in your browsing by encrypting your DNS requests. There has been kind of some, I don't want to say controversy, but debate over how either effective it is, with ISPs still being at the root level of any DNS request, or, you know, network traffic going through, all the way up to what provider Mozilla is actually using by default for these, which right out of the box, Mozilla has gone with Cloudflare, which I believe has gotten into some, I don't want to say legal hot water, but there's been some discussion on whether or not Cloudflare actually secures their traffic, or if they roll over on a dime to give the data to parties that want it, whether it's ethical or not. So all kinds of questions, but it is rolled out to Firefox. It does not appear to be enabled by default. At least it wasn't in my instances, but it might be in the future. It's clear where Mozilla wants to go, and there are other providers you can also use instead of Cloudflare, which is the default. So that's DNS over HTTPS, and I guess we'll hear more about it in the future because it's here to stay.
Yeah, I had heard in the past that Mozilla was working towards trying to be the most secure browser. So
yes, Mozilla, ever since they kind of rebooted Firefox with the Quantum Initiative, Mozilla has sort of pivoted to be more of a privacy-minded company, having known that they've mostly kind of lost their dominant market share since the mid to late 2000s with the rise of Google Chrome. So they've decided to very nobly and respectfully pivot towards privacy and differentiate themselves from other browsers, where they try to add more protection by default. And they've really been pioneers that have sort of inspired other folks, particularly Apple, and in some ways Microsoft, to follow suit in the ever competitive war against each other for privacy controls,
right,
and whether or not they actually adhere to them. Mozilla seems to be the most trustworthy out of the bunch, in my observation and opinion. Firefox is my browser of choice, as always.
That's definitely mine as well. I know that Google Chrome originally started off as being pretty secure, like didn't want Flash, didn't want Java, none of that stuff. And then it just feels bulkier than it was.
Chrome lived long enough to see itself become the villain, effectively.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And Google has done the same, unfortunately.
Because it had all the right makings when it was first released, and then Google just kind of said, you know what? Nah.
Google just started throwing the kitchen sink and all kinds of features, and then started, you know, just building all kinds of crap into it.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's sort of becoming the new IE6 of the modern era, where most, you know, a lot of websites sometimes don't tend to work in Firefox, but they might work in the WebKit engine, or aka Chrome, which is, I really dislike that a lot.
No, I agree. Like I said, it used to be really lightweight, and then it went the other direction.
It happens. So, but yeah, Firefox is rolling this change out, and who knows? We'll see how it pans out in the future.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do we got? This one is more of some. This is more of a Steve investigation on the inner workings of GitHub Desktop. So, earlier this year. And by earlier this year, I mean probably closer to last year at this point, I was trying to figure out if there was a way you can run GitHub Desktop with more than one GitHub account. Turns out you can't. There is no built-in support for multiple accounts in GitHub Desktop. However, there is a workaround I kind of by accident discovered in Windows, where you can run another instance of GitHub Desktop as another user in Windows, and you can attach that to another GitHub account, and thus you can run two instances of GitHub Desktop and do your commits, pulls, and whatevers as either account at will, and the app doesn't care if you're running two instances at once, as far as I've seen. So consider that a workaround until maybe they roll out official multi-account support, but currently in their roadmap and in the official request that someone else put in, someone replied and closed it saying it's not currently in their roadmap. Aww. But we have a workaround for now if you're in Windows. Maybe there's a workaround in Mac, but I haven't tested that. I don't have really a current Mac I can test it on.
Not really. I don't know if you really want to go out of your way either.
It's really a hokey workaround to begin with, but it works if you need it. Works it if you need it in a pinch. Mm. And lastly, the topic I came up with was something that developed, I believe, 1 to 2 days ago. I call it the Cortana virus. The Cortana 19. Microsoft is making some fairly significant changes to Cortana, having whether or not it's low usage or just change in strategy. Cortana is being pivoted to the enterprise and is thus losing consumer-based skills. I don't know if you know, but apparently Cortana had the ability to handle IoT devices or control music or all sorts of things. So if you weren't like most people and disabled Cortana out of the box, Cortana had a couple of things you could do, similar to how Siri or Alexa, they retain these features, but Cortana is losing them, and Cortana is being moved more towards an autonomous assistant inside applications, where she's more in the background and not so much named as Cortana. Maybe just the engine will be used in future endeavors, and apparently Cortana is remaining in the enterprise for whatever she'll be used for. But in the next update of Windows 10, she'll be de-emphasized.
Okay. I know that Microsoft Search, I wonder if she's going to be working in unison with that.
Most likely. I'm sure bits and pieces of Cortana will stick around in one way or another, but the original vision of her being a Siri competitor one-to-one appears to be quite dead. And apparently, funny enough, Siri just decided to chime in on me, so my phone is going to go face down on my desk now, so that doesn't happen again.
That was awesome.
Welcome to the Help This Health podcast featuring guest Siri.
Yes.
Okay, and with that, I feel sufficiently booted up, unless you have any other housekeeping to discuss.
Sadly, Microsoft is discontinuing or retiring, as they say, some of their popular certifications.
Oh, no.
So the MCSE core infrastructure, the MCSE, basically their MCSEs and their MCSDs.
Oh, no. What'll I do without the C's and the D's?
Well, they want you to use their role-based certifications, but I'm wondering if overall people are going to value them less.
Yeah, or Microsoft might value them less. I admittedly didn't read too much into that link you sent me, but I did click a little bit through it, and from what I saw, they're sort of de-emphasizing a lot of on-premise stuff. That's what one comment seemed to gather, and they want to more make things geared towards the cloud, or any skills that you might have required previously on-premise are going to be kind of shoved to the wayside in favor of using Microsoft's cloud services, which it's a blessing and a curse. It's a double-edged sword for if you're a sysadmin in an organization that's still largely on-premise, this is probably going to hurt you in the long run if you plan to stick with Microsoft for on-premise and stay on-premise. So we'll see if Microsoft stays this course, but right now it's not looking too great for the on-premise only sysadmin unless you are just insanely good at everything.
Right. You just picked it up naturally. And to say also, though, the Learn Microsoft or whatever, the community, the modules are okay. They're all right. I started doing some just to see if I knew anything about Office 365.
Nice. Yeah. And yeah, maybe they'll provide more community driven or learning based things. But till then, in the meantime, it's not any official certifications will just not be offered by Microsoft.
Well, they do have the ones on Microsoft Learn. So it's similar to like the Salesforce paths, if you've ever done any Salesforce training.
I have not, no. Salesforce is a huge blind spot for me, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Or maybe fortunately.
It's probably fortunate.
Yeah, I don't really care to learn Salesforce. It's, I don't know, not really my thing.
No.
So.
It's all right. I only know how to do like mail routing and stuff in it, so.
Yep.
Nothing too crazy.
All right, so I think if we are all good. Have we reached our desktop or login screen of our boot up at this point?
We have. We are now logged in.
Oh, that is awesome. Let's launch an app. Let's do it. Let's go into the basic auth unknown. And I emphasize unknown. I probably owe Disney money now.
Good job.
So what's going on with basic auth? It's part of Microsoft's big, you know, modern auth initiative. It's going away. Goodbye. And it's taking a lot of things with it.
So many things. This is
too many things.
So horrible. No, it's really a good thing. I can't say it's horrible. I don't want to get bamboozled over saying no.
Let us preface everything we are about to say with, this is a good thing. It is good to be eschewing insecure protocols, processes, any skeletons in the closet that might compromise anything. That being said, it's still, God, it's a pain.
And it's old.
It's old. It's, oh, man. And there's going to be casualties along the way. Some of those casualties may be very deeply ingrained into your current systems. So, what are some things that we, that are going to be killed off of this stuff?
All right. So, PowerShell. If you connect to Exchange Online at all, it uses basic authentication. So it's very interesting because the blog post contradicts itself because the new PowerShell commandlets for Exchange have the ability to do MFA and all that stuff. I mean, the old ones do as well. It's just a little bit more complex.
The current ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, the current ones do have the ability to do MFA in their current state. I can confirm this where if I try to run my own custom PowerShell connection function, with which very much does have the authentication basic command switch in there, which I'm quite sure will be one of the things that will stop working once Microsoft rolls this out, it will still invoke MFA per the MFA policy of my org, which it may or may not be if you are away from your organization, MFA fires off and it works just fine. So that's the current situation. So it does, it's not to say that it's not insecure, but it is going to be, it's going away in favor of the new, more efficient version of the Exchange Online Commandlets, which kind of wraps it all up into one single function called connect-exchange-online, which is part of the Exchange Online PowerShell module, as they're calling it oh so gracefully, which is, you know, if you're not too in the loop, it sounds very much like the old one. It's like, oh, hey, what's the difference between that and the old MS Online module that I've been using this whole time? But it is very much different. It has a big dog and pony show when you first launch it and connect. It says, hey, you're running the new one. These are the new commandlets, yeah. The 9 new commandlets that replace the old commandlets. And have a nice day.
Right. So, and it's what, like 9?
It's only like 9 right now. And it was so funny because I haven't been keeping up on this. I remember I watched a demo at Microsoft Ignite in a session, and I was under the impression that it was a lot more finished than it currently is. It can do things supposedly faster when in bulk.
Yes.
But as far as I understand, it's only working for 9 of the most common commandlets. But once you venture out of that, you're still running the old commandlets. Right. So I'm not quite sure how baked this is at the moment. But what's frustrating is Microsoft did announce in that post that they're only months away from switching over to it. So, you know, all the scripts you got, hope you're ready for some rewriting, because the new commandlets have new prefixes and aliases to them. So we have the old commandlet, which is get-mailbox, and we have the new one, which is get-exo-mailbox. So yep. You're going to have to review a lot of scripts if you're using this in Exchange Online. I'm sure the old ones will be available for a time, but you will want to switch over to the new ones.
Yeah, you're not going to really have a choice, though. Once the basic auth thing happens.
I really like the quote in that article. We're still working hard on the code. Yeah. Have some customers working on this with us already, and we'll have more to say on this in the next couple of months. Please be patient. We know many of you are desperate to get your hands on something that works. We're working really hard to deliver that to you. Okay, that's great, but, you know, if you're gonna, you know, pull the rug out from under me, at least get me a replacement rug.
Exactly.
No. In due time, that is equal to or greater than the rug that was under me before.
Yes.
It'll put me a little more peace of mind, and I can at least start to figure out what kind of scripts I need to rewrite or replace, or what's going to break when this change is over.
Right. And you can always use the Cloud Shell as well, which is pretty cool.
That is true. The Cloud Shell is available.
And you could move all your scripts there as well. And then you could still use basic auth because you would be, well, it wouldn't be basic auth, you'd be authenticated and because you'd already be logged in.
But how would the Cloud Shell work with like on-premise scripts and scheduled tasks on servers and things like that? That's my question.
From what I'm trying to remember, it's been a long time since I used the Cloud Shell. You should still be able to connect back.
To on-premise?
Yeah, I think there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
You might have to do some magic.
A lot of these things are, they're kind of like, you can, it's like, I'll put this in quotes, it's like, you can do this, but it would be really nice if there were more direct ways of saying, here's the old way, here's the new way, here's how we recommend doing it the new way.
Right.
Rather than kind of doing the wishy-washy, hey, we're working on it, we'll tell you someday.
And it's months away, and you're like, all of a sudden, on day one, you're going to lose all your scripts. It's horrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it kind of puts me on edge just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I've done as much as I could up to this point to prepare for it. I have played around with the new command. I can connect to Exchange Online using the new command set. However, it's still kind of, you know, I kind of am stuck at a where do I go from here point, because I say the new commandlets are different. My old scripts aren't going to automatically use these new commandlets, as far as I know, unless the old ones are aliased to the new ones. And not only that, it's apparently, unless there's some new switch that they'll be adding in this quote-unquote development period, you can't connect to Exchange Online with this new connection function using aliased commands with a hybrid setup.
No.
So for anyone who doesn't know, when you make a new PS session to your Exchange on-premise and Exchange Online, it's usually a good idea to alias one of those PS sessions, because your on-premise and online are using the same commandlet names. So if you want to differentiate in the same PowerShell window, you should prefix, say, for example, the Exchange Online commands with what I used was get-exol whatever.
Before it was a thing.
Before Microsoft did this. So call me a pioneer. Really call me ahead of Microsoft in terms of the curve, or maybe Microsoft owes me money for stealing this idea from me. But the current new PowerShell module for Exchange Online prefixes these new 9 commandlets with get-exo whatever. So get-exo mailbox. So if you connected on-premise and connected to online, the same PowerShell window, you would get your Exchange on-premise with your usual PS session as always. And you'd get the Exchange Online one, and you would get the commands, the get-exo commands. However, the old ones are still currently loaded into this module, so you're going to have conflicts with your Exchange on-premise. So what you might have to do, which then will effectively require a total rewrite of all your scripts, is then maybe go the other way around and alias your commands for on-premise. So you could alias your PS session for on-premise with maybe EXOP. Mm-hmm. So your on-premise get-mailbox might be get-EXOP mailbox or get-EXOP calendar processing or whatever. So it doesn't step on the toes of the new Exchange Online PowerShell module with its get-EXO mailbox and get-mailbox. So you can kind of see where I'm going here with, if you have existing scripts where you've already innovated your way with aliasing the online commands, well, guess what? Now the opposite, you kind of have to flip it over and do the opposite, because Microsoft decided to alias the online commands, but not all of them, only 9 of them right now. So it's going to be a mess. And I'm really nervous about this changeover, and I'm curious as to what the future brings, and we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, just like Microsoft said.
I know, we'll see. I think some of my concerns with this is, I know they told us last year that this was coming, but I don't think they gave us all of the details really, truly until now. But we're also losing Exchange Active Sync. So if you're using anything other than the Outlook app, anyone who's using that is going to get disconnected.
This is particularly going to be a nightmare for the folks who are with Android phones. Yes. Or using off-brand mail apps or default. Yes. Apps in Android. And the solution might have to be just start using the Outlook app at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there really is any other option besides the Outlook app.
Not as far as I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong. Are Pop and IMAP going away as a result of this?
They are. SMTP will remain unchanged. But this is going to be a pain for mailboxes that are set up in Pop and IMAP. It's going to really just wreak all sorts of havoc everywhere.
If you had a special jerry-rigged setup or some really custom application that could only accept mail or send mail with Pop or IMAP, you're going to be screwed. You're going to have to change it over to something that doesn't rely on ActiveSync or just does the direct, is it the EWS?
Yes.
Is it just going to be only EWS going forward?
I do think they're actually limiting that as well. The connection, I forgot where I saw that, but I do think that is going away.
Oh, that's lovely. So effectively everything is going to break.
Yes.
Just plan for everything breaking and be happy about it. Welcome to the cloud.
Welcome to the cloud. Also, you have to make sure that modern authentication is on.
That too. Yeah, if you haven't started planning that, you might want to start planning it very, very soon.
That's all part of it.
Oh boy.
I have to start documenting what goes into turning on modern off. Some people say just do it, but I don't know.
People who say just do it never quite understand the potential disasters that could happen from just doing something.
Yeah.
You know?
Nope, I get it. And that's why I haven't done it yet. Yeah, I'm not going to flip that switch yet.
Yeah, it's not great. So
they did, however, improve the sign-in report, so you can report on these. However, it only does 250,000 rows, so if you're trying to get everyone and everything, you're going to have to use the Graph API.
Oh, yes, because Microsoft loves taking things out of PowerShell and moving it to new shiny things that don't use PowerShell for some reason.
I miss the old reporting commands.
I miss the ability to check for new Office 365 endpoints using, you know, just the REST API commands and PowerShell that Microsoft provided a script for, which mysteriously stopped working, you know, as of a couple of weeks ago. So I believe if I Googled this correctly, it's been moved to
Graph,
but the KB article is still up, and the script that no longer functions is still posted there, and there's been no update.
I just don't really understand Graph.
I don't either. I unfortunately can't say anything about it, because I still haven't done anything with it.
I started writing something to try to query something on Friday, but I stared at it, and I was like, I can't do this today.
That's fine. You still did 1,000% more than I did. You know, for an Office 365 podcast, I feel like I know nothing about Office 365 some days. Today is one of those days.
It's okay. It's fine. You can't know everything, Steve.
Yeah. These are my foibles. And I will live with them.
You will. So, we can talk about Teams.
Ooh, let's be Teams mates.
Yeah, let's be Teams mates. So, there's lots of stuff coming to Teams. And one of the ones that has made a kerfluffle on Twitter is the one that tenants less than 5,000 users are going to get an org-wide team. And so the internet is like, no, we can't do this. This is terrible. And so I'm not really sure how I feel about it. I feel like a lot of organizations want that.
They really want, I guess they just really want people to use Teams, don't they? They just want that adoption, and they don't care, come hell or high water, how they're going to get there. So, yeah, all new tenants with 5,000 users or fewer will start with an org-wide team.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And you're going to have, of course, all the small businesses that barely even know what Teams is, aside from what is that annoying thing that starts with my computer.
And you're going to get the one person who works in the office that doesn't realize that it's org-wide, and they're going to send like a picture of their weekend to the entire org.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Improper onboarding of Teams and improper training of Teams can lead to some really funny but probably really awful mishaps in communications.
Very true. It's lots of confusion all the time. But it was just a very interesting one to see that they were like, look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to force you to have a team.
So this is all new tenants with 5,000 users or fewer. Is this across all licenses?
I believe so.
Ooh, lovely. So E3, E5, FU, whatever that other license
A,
was.
A, B, C, D, E, F, F, F,
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They're all going to get this.
I think my most favorite thing, though, coming out for Teams is the Outlook and Teams integrated experience.
Yes, that will be nice, especially if you like the single pane of glass, single application to do it all
experience. Well, it is out now.
If you're not in education, that is. If you're in education, really? You're going to be still months behind in Teams updates. Like.
Oh, right. Teams.
Yeah, you're on the cutting edge. We're.
I forgot about that.
Where I come from, we're still on ancient versions of Teams that Microsoft just doesn't update for some reason.
Right. So another thing, too, is the chat and collaboration. You are now able to tag, so sort of like a distribution list, a group. So that way you can send a chat to a group instead of having to type in every person's name.
Oh, nice. That is good.
I know, because it's kind of like when you're doing an email, you don't want to have to remember everybody.
Yeah, or you don't want to send, 50 emails out. You want to send one email to ADL, which will then do the distribution and won't tag you for spam or whatever.
Oh, look at this. New file experience in Teams powered by SharePoint.
Ooh, that sounds like potential for lots of fun, because SharePoint.
Ooh. I wonder, though, where it's putting, what directory it's putting it in.
Like most Teams and SharePoint, it's kind of the mystery box. It's there, but have fun finding it unless you're a super duper MVP expert of Teams.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff coming to the file experience.
Yeah. Oh boy.
That's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, and yeah, it'll be coming out soon, so.
Captions are coming out. Are out now, it looks like.
I really like that one feature of Teams where if you are in a video session and you need privacy or you don't want to show the environment around you, Teams can now blur the area that isn't you around. I guess I don't know if that will work with every webcam, but it definitely sounds like a nice little feature.
Oh, that is good.
They showed that off in a commercial recently.
I like that you're getting your Teams news from a commercial.
Yeah, Teams is on TV now, in case you needed to know more about Teams and how awesome it is.
In the Security and Compliance Center, you're also now able to do legal holds on private channels.
Excellent.
And so good stuff. And there's more. There is so much. My brain's not doing that today.
Yeah. I can't brain with Teams.
No, not today. There's too much. It is that application. Talk about bloaty.
Yeah, it's... Did you know there's going to be a Microsoft Teams Qbot?
What?
It's going to be for education. It's going to be designed for classroom teaching scenarios, which allow teachers, tutors, and students to intelligently answer each other's questions within the Microsoft Teams collaboration platform.
What? Huh. That's creepy.
Remember Smarter Child?
Yes.
Back in the late 90s and 2000s? It's just that, but it's an education.
Remember Smart House?
Look how far we've come as a society. Smart House is now a reality.
I think I'm going to watch that tonight. But no, that movie was kind of creepy, though.
It is really thoroughly amazing how Smart House kind of accurately predicted a lot of AI and assistance. Yes. And things.
Well, and now the creepiest part, though, the scariest part of that movie is when you realize that Peggy Bundy is, in fact, the house.
Yes. And the guy who plays the dad has been typecast as guy who plays the dad in most movies.
Yeah, does he even have a name?
He does. He's on IMDb.
Dad.
I'm not gonna cheat and look him up right now, but yeah, he's basically just played quote unquote the dad in a lot of stuff.
I just feel like every time she unravels herself, though, she's going to come out in like tight pleather leggings and a cheetah top.
The kid who played the son, I think he went on to bigger and better things.
Yeah,
too. Luck
of the Irish
and some like legit, real big
Wait,
budget
hold
stuff
on, really?
Now.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, I'm doing my best not to Google it.
I know
right
I'm
now,
Googling
yeah, if you wanna validate
no,
for
I
me.
I have to know.
Go for it. Look. I just remember he was the kid with the very blatantly early 2000s spiked hair.
Oh yeah, no, he rocked that. Holy, he doesn't even look the same at all.
Most people don't look the same from as they did in 2001, 2002.
I do. I have not changed.
Okay, I stand corrected.
Sorry. Is this really the same person? This is not the same person.
You never know. If you check their IMDb, that's like public record. That's like official.
No. Holy shit.
Wow.
Not the same person. Anyways,
wow. Okay, so... We went from Teams
no,
to
he
Smart
just
House
look the
to...
Same. Yeah, no, he doesn't have the spiky hair. So, the Jurassic Games, In the Rough, Distortion, 2 Years of Love, The Congressman.
I mean, I didn't say that he probably wasn't involved in a whole bunch of just rando
no,
stuff,
I
too.
Don't even see a decent movie that he was in. Hawaii 5-0.
There you go. Something okay. Big budget.
I'll take it.
The point is, AI has enabled people to not only accurately predict the future, but make them make careers out of actors that may or may not be mildly successful.
Yeah, AI.
Okay, I think we've run this topic into the ground as best as we possibly could at this point.
So let's
educate some peoples a little bit. We're going to move on to a segment I like to call Play That Function Music, White Boy.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to basically do is I'm going to continue my never-ending, ever-growing list of PowerShell topics. And we're going to speak a little bit about advanced functions. And let me preface this with, it may not necessarily be an official teaching that I'm about to give. This is more my experiences in advanced functions and how I have rolled them out and how I usually code with them or script with them. And the short of it is advanced functions are really, really nice in PowerShell. What they provide for you is portability of code, reusability of code, proper consistent documentation, available via many built-in features of PowerShell, as well as support for things in PowerShell like piping or command sets, parameters, and validation, and lots of things that the standard Microsoft-provided commandlets give you by default, and it really makes your code and your scripts seem a lot more professionally put together, and it'll just make you look really good if you just know how to use them. So advanced functions, they've been around, and IDEs like Visual Studio Code and ISE, if you're still using ISE, contain templates for advanced functions and how to get off the ground with them. And it'll start you out with a basic template for adding in your inputs, your parameters, and it will give you blocks to perform the action code. And you can end the functions with a return value if you so wish, which is usually the most common way to end a function. When you add parameters, you can specify if you want to pipe them, or if you want to group them together in sets, or make them required, where a function will not fire off if it does not have the data it requires before it begins. It really can help with making sure that the right data goes into a function, and the right code executes, and the wrong actions are not occurring. For example, I have a exchange connection function. In the grand scheme of things, it's mostly tame. It's a wrapper for several methods of connecting to exchange on-premise, online, on-premise and online, and the new Exchange Online PowerShell module, which is coming out soon. And I accomplished this via validation sets and command and parameter sets. And what this does is it will take the input data that you want to specify, and it will run functions in certain modes where it will perform actions based on what you input. So for example, if I want to connect to Exchange on-premise, I will say, hey, let's call my connect Exchange function with the switch of Exchange server. And I have five options you can enter into this function. You can't specify anything else, otherwise you'll get an error saying this is an invalid option. It's like a multiple choice test. So we might get something where if you enter Exchange server Apple, it's going to say, nope, Apple is not a valid option in this function. So if you say Exchange server EXOP, I programmed that as one of the options, he'll say, cool, we're going to run this function, connect you to Exchange on-premise. We're going to run the code that was specified in the if block for the EXOP parameter and connect you to Exchange on-premise and have a nice day. Things like this can really help you out with reusing the code and making sure that folks who run your functions are running them correctly. Sort of provide what I like to call guardrails or validation. So all these kinds of things are fun, and Let's see, what else do we got that I can talk about that I particularly implement? I usually really like to document my functions as well as possible. One of the big things, one of the big pet peeves I have with functions, particularly with some Microsoft provided ones, ironically, is the lack of examples in the documentation. You can provide examples in advanced functions with the .example documentation header. And when you add that in, it basically can add a new section when you do the get help on your function. And it will basically give you the spiel on how to run it and ways you can just run it with examples, so you're not just completely floored as to why a function isn't running the way you expect it to. And let's see, what else? I usually like to also end my functions with return objects. Sometimes maybe more than they need to, but it's nice to return a function with either a custom PowerShell object that can return data, and you can select it, you can format it, and or export it, or use the grid view feature of PowerShell. All these kinds of things, which makes it really useful for other functions or exporting data in a way that's coherent and flexible. So other than that, that's all I can really think of at the moment. I think I've touched upon everything I had notes for. The bottom line is advanced functions. Use them. There's plenty of scripts I've come across online where they're just not used enough.
I haven't really built anything myself with them yet, but I have been using them more, and they are incredible. I've pieced together exactly what I need, and I make it work, but I'm definitely finding that I like them a lot better.
Yes, absolutely. It just really helps when you're trying to make your code portable and reusable, where someone asks, hey, can you do this? And I go, yes, I wrote this a while ago. Let me just whip it out and get it into production with minimal changes.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Do it all at once.
Absolutely. So that's my little TED Talk on advanced functions.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Thank you. The tip jar is at the door.
That was kind of like a TED Talk.
Yeah, it was. I guess it was more condensed than I thought it was going to be, but then at the same time, I guess it didn't have to be too complicated.
No.
If you want a deep dive or a more proper, thought out look at it, Microsoft documents it well, and there's plenty of examples online. I just figured it's a good Kickstarter for more exploration of the curious mind. All right, so that's the end of PowerShell function magic for this week, for today, and guess what? Bonus topic. So
yay! This one sounds good.
This one's a little different. This one might be a little bit more fun to me, or a little bit, you know, I could stop talking about PowerShell and talk about more about SCCM or MemCM or whatever it wants to call itself today.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so
it's having an identity crisis.
Once upon a time, SCCM used to be called SMS. And I believe it was called, I'm forgetting what it was called, somewhere in between if it was, and then it became System Center Configuration Manager for the longest, longest time. So SCCM was what it was called when I first learned it, and as of Microsoft Ignite in the fall of 2019, it has been kind of sort of renamed to Microsoft Endpoint Manager Configuration Manager, or MemCM, which is a lovely name.
Why couldn't they just leave it?
I don't know. Well, it's still called SMS under the hood if you really look. Mm. But effectively, it's meant to integrate more with the new Microsoft Endpoint Manager and Intune, which are cloud-based tools. And Microsoft's goal is to kind of interweave them together. So SCCM is not going away. It's just getting a name change and more integrations with the cloud offerings. So if you currently have a SCCM, don't worry. As long as you're on current branch, you'll just be upgraded with the integration features intact. Woo. So, but I don't really so much want to talk about the cloud parts of it. It's just more of the fundamentals of it. I still see a lot of folks online or even in casual conversation just trying to wrap their heads around how SCCM works and what are the best ways to use it or manage endpoints or servers or what have you. And the four things that I genuinely usually recommend to folks is get to know SCCM applications, detection methods, how to deploy them, and how to update the applications. This is usually a good way to kind of get your organization under control with, you know, all the random programs on people's computers and get them updated on a semi-regular cadence. So I don't day-to-day manage SCCM anymore, but went back at a former job when I did. One of the big challenges we had with all our endpoints was there's tons of versions of, you know, Firefox or Chrome or Flash or what have you. We even had QuickTime back then when QuickTime was still a thing, and they were all in various states of currency. So once we were able to deploy SCCM and get the agent out to all systems, we were able to start having fun with updating the applications. And that involves getting all your known applications into SCCM, knowing how to silently install and uninstall them, which will give you the ability to update them as well. So most particularly Flash, which seems to update every other week until it's retired later this year, was one big such target for security flaws, and keeping it updated is paramount. So we would add it as an application, and then one of your biggest challenges is, well, how do I detect that Flash is installed? So detection methods in SCCM applications help you determine if it is correctly installed in the system, and if it fails that check, then it can get it can receive a deployment for the newer application. And this is kind of a strategy for updating your applications in SCCM. If you've already deployed an application, the deployment for applications in particular just remains out there. It does not necessarily have a expiration time like packages, the older deployment method in SCCM has. And you can exploit this by using the continuous deployment method of applications by updating the base application and detection method to the newest version that you download and load in. That way, all of your deployed systems who are receiving this will check suddenly that they do not have the updated version because you updated on the server, and it will be deployed to the newest version. And you can combine this with maintenance windows, and suddenly you have a fairly automated update ecosystem for your computers. So it's pretty fun, and once you get it, it kind of just helps out with keeping things up to date that are not base patches or whatnot.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So that's kind of my little spiel. That was how I used to do it. It also hooks into PowerShell as well. And because SCCM is mostly, the UI is mostly just PowerShell commands with a nice little UI on top of it. So if you know enough PowerShell with the SCCM modules, you can use that as well to further automate the process.
Wow. I don't know anything about SCCM, so I just kind of nod my head and agree a lot.
Yeah, I feel like, so I'll use this opportunity to also kind of highlight that I believe TIFF is starting this. We're going to probably attempt to do a blog for Hope This Helps.
Yes.
And this can be a topic that we can probably delve into further, and I can kind of share my jumbled thoughts on how I used to do this and how to kind of show it in action.
Yeah, I think that would be really good. You have a lot of really good content that you produce.
I just have a lot of thoughts and feelings about things, really. Yeah.
And you put them in a form that's tangible.
Sometimes. I can't guarantee it'll be every time.
Actually, I can't say that's true, because there are often times that people don't know what you're talking about, and I'm like, oh, hold on, I speak Steve.
Yep, it's just a matter of PR and...
Right.
And whatever. So.
Right. That's why I'm surprised people let us do this.
Yeah.
Even let us do a podcast.
Some may find it coherent, and most other people probably find this incoherent. So.
Yeah. I mean, I find us somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. It is what it is, I guess. Oh boy. Okay. So I'm done my topics. I need water.
Yeah. This was definitely a you kind of day, and that's okay. So this week's Ask the Stiffs question, are you on team GIF or are you on team JIF?
That is the debate that continues to divide America to this day.
I think the GIF's response was the best.
That was really cool that Jif decided to make a GIF peanut butter jar.
I kind of want to get one so I can have it.
It'd be nice just to display that at work. Mm. So, spoiler alert, I am on team GIF. I don't believe...
It's not GIF. It can't be.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the pronunciation of GIF as GIF. I'm sorry.
It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense to me either, honestly.
That's not a hard G.
No, it's not. It's just not.
Maybe they shouldn't have used that combination of letters.
Yeah, that's kind of my final thoughts on that.
Like JPEG, there's no other way around it. It's JPEG.
Yeah, so let's go further. Are you team JPEG or team GayPEG? Are you PNG or PNG?
I'm PNG, like, and JPEG.
It's one of those things where it's like, just think about the basics of English and pronunciation of letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's my question to the forum. Feel free to debate this.
Are you PNG?
Or continue to debate this.
Say what you are, PNG or JPEG or PEG.
I am, after careful consideration, I am going to pick JPEG and PNG.
Well, I have to...
Final answer.
Wait, did you change them?
No, that's just what it is. Just GIF, JPEG, PNG. The reason is PNG and not PNG is because you're pronouncing the letter and not the word. I mean, animated GIF, that's when you can pronounce it as the J sound.
Right.
But I'm counting it, I'm calling it GIF.
Good.
Similar to how, you know, Imgur.com, people Imgur? Think it's Imgur.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Imgur.
Imgur.
Just, that's my instinct. It's easier to say Imgur. You're kind of tripping over too many syllables.
Yeah, no, Imgur is the way to go.
Of course, yeah.
I don't even know what it stands for. It always says Imgur in my head.
Well, I think image is probably the base of the word, but yeah. I don't know. I just like Imgur.
Yeah, that sounds, too. Sounds Imgur, very, Imgur. I'm all
it
the
sounds
Imgurs.
Very Web 2.0 to me.
It does, and we all know how you like your vintage.
Yep, indeed.
All right, so that's what we have this week.
Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Okay, so yes, we are at the end of the show. I am kicking myself because I keep forgetting to even bring this up at the end. So we have our Plus Delta section where this is kind of just the, hey, we are, hope this helps. We have a Twitter, HTH the podcast is where you can add us. We've helped you out for 50 some odd minutes. So why don't you help us out? Rate us on iTunes, do whatever. You can rate it anything. I'm not even asking you to rate it good.
Just you put can rate something.
Rate something. We have a Facebook group. We are going to soon have a blog once we figure that out, where we're going to maybe go in depth with more topics or elaborations on what we mean other than the show notes in this podcast. And of course, we have the raw feed of the podcast at twitch.tv/hopethishelps, which is kind of it's the quickest way to get a recording of the podcast out before we have the formal edited version. Just kind of a nice little quick and easy thing. And yeah, I think that about wraps it up. I don't know if you have any closing words, but I think that's about all I got.
That's all I've got this week.
All right. Woohoo. So we are done episode 8. Another one in the bag. From all of us here at the Hope This Helps podcast, we hope this helps.